Annoy people on the quiet car and call the fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
If that lion forms on the right, babe, not that Maggie's back in.
I got you for 3 hours till 5 a.m. in the warm-up show. You know how it goes. You know the number to call as well, 888-808-1019. I'm telling you all the stuff you already know. It's reinforcement. It's good. Shut up. We got Rami on the other side. And again, got you for 3 hours until 5 a.m. and the warm-up show. And they avoided disaster. You know, there are some games that, you know, it's a good win. It's a solid win. You take it. You move on. You don't think so much of the win. But what the reverse could have been, and the Mets were having a moment there where I know Met fans felt it. The starting pitcher, Feltner, comes out of the game in the first inning with shoulder soreness and a lat issue. He's probably going to the IL. You're playing a game against Colorado and a series against Colorado. You cannot lose, right? We understand. I got a bunch of people. I guess I said must win last night. If I said must win, yeah, we all know it's not must win, right? But these are important games. These are bad teams you have to beat. You're battling teams like the Diamondbacks and Padres who do not lose. Yes, the Braves lose. And now you're only a half a game behind the Braves for the third wild card. But you're in the middle of a game against the lousy Colorado Rockies. They lose their pitcher in the first inning. You got shut down by their bullpen the night before, and now you're going to have 8 innings against one of the worst bullpens in baseball. And this offense, and yes, Pete Alonso comes through with a base hit, drives in a run early in the game in the first inning. But pretty much this offense is being shut down by this Colorado Rockies lousy bullpen. Right, and now Blackburn made a trade for him. He's come in. He's done a nice job in his two starts. He's added something here, especially as you're, you know, seeing Severino struggle and different elements of this rotation and pitching staff. We got to get to Ottavino and some of the things he said. I heard Keith talking about it. Found it very funny. Ottavino's good on TV. He was on SNY in the offseason. Now he's giving good quotes. But you're pitching well. You're holding them down in this ballpark. Yes. Colorado, especially McMahon, has played, you know, relatively really good defense in this series and in this game. But you head to the ninth inning 2-2 against the Colorado Rockies, who've been throwing slop at you. Jason Shreve making his season start. And this Mets offense that has, I've talked about it, right? They were showing it, I don't know if it was in the game yesterday, the game today, talking about, even with runners in scoring position, the OPS of the bottom of the lineup, tops in baseball, up and down the lineup, how good this offense has been since really the move, since the meeting and the move to the leadoff spot from Lindor. This offense has been as good as any. And since the All-Star break, it continues to be a really big disappointment here. It's had a couple of big games, but hasn't done anything. And you're watching this offense flounder in a game that, you know, if you lose this game and you lose this series and you start this road trip with two losses. Yes, you had the one game in St. Louis and a victory there to split them up. But you can't start this road trip, this month, that's going to dictate where this season ends up in so many ways. You can't start it losing 2 out of 3 of the Angels, and we'll get to the Angels and the Yankees soon. 888-808-1019. But you can't lose the first 2 of 3 to the Angels and follow it up by losing to Colorado with Peterson on the mound trying to stave off a sweep at the hands of Colorado. You cannot lose that game. And then in the ninth inning, the guys who have led you here, your leaders, do what they do. And yes, obviously Lindor comes through with the big hit that breaks the game open. Even Winker comes through with an add-on to get you that third run. And when they lead off with a triple themselves at the bottom of the ninth, you thought, damn, that Winker hit's going to play loom large. But I think the Alvarez triple, Alvarez has been struggling, right? He's been floundering offensively. He's moved down in the lineup. A guy who came back, right? You could literally, I mentioned right there in the open when things changed, the meeting, Lindor hitting leadoff, right? Those are things that kind of changed the season. You can add Francisco Alvarez coming back from the IL right there with them as things that have changed this team. Things that if you look at their record prior, you look at their record after, it's night and day. You look at the pitching staff, you look at what he's done defensively. He is a huge cog and an important piece of this team. And he's been doing nothing offensively. And in a game they can't afford to lose in the ninth inning, after being shut down by one of the worst bullpens in Major League Baseball for a second consecutive night, Alvarez hits one off the wall. It's misplayed out there in right field, allows him to get a triple, and suddenly it just feels like, okay. Like, I know the Lindor hit you needed, right? But that triple almost, like, as soon as he's on third, nobody out, the feeling of relief washes over you. That is an enormous hit. They needed it. The offense needed it. The team needed it. He needed it. And it immediately changed the feel of the game. You add in a couple of walks to the bottom of the lineup, and then Lindor comes up, and he's been struggling, and they talked in the postgame, or at least I read. I didn't see the postgame. I had a run here as soon as the game ended. But they talk about it in the postgame. They saw some of Lindor's swings getting big, and I like to talk about this a lot because I fight with a lot of callers about this all the time, and I tweeted about it, and it bothers me a bunch. Lindor gets two walks in front of him. Base is loaded, one out, here he comes to the plate, and a lot of people think you need to take a pitch there. And I love the aggressive nature, and we've seen it from this offense, we've seen it from this team, and we've seen it from Lindor, who's been struggling now for the last week and a half or so. And other than a hit early in the game, had some bad at-bats in this game, and has been striking out more than usual over the last 2 weeks or so. And instead of taking a pitch, instead of doing what everybody thinks you should do in good baseball and all the nonsense that I have to fight with, analytics, blah, 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 all the nonsense, he takes a first pitch fastball to drive and laces it for the game-winning hit. Followed up by the Winker base hit going the other way. They focused on going the other way. Keith did a good job talking about it while the game was going on. They were really focused on taking that fastball the other way. And in the ninth inning, they come through with two hits. Diaz comes in and saves the game. And that's a nice little win, right? It's a good win. Score a couple runs in the ninth. You get Alvarez out of his slump off the wall. Lindor gives you the big hit. Another huge hit from this guy who's been their, you know, their leader, their savior, their everything they could possibly ask from Lindor all year long. And yes, you get a nice little win. But you avoided a terrible loss. And that's one of those wins. And I'm not saying don't feel good about it. And I'm not saying, hey, you don't, I'm not, I'm, all I'm saying is you don't stack it up with one of the great wins of the season. It doesn't, like, if you're going to do a Rico Bronya podcast on the best wins of the year and the worst losses of the year, this was a win that won't make the best win of the season. But a loss to, and what a loss would have signified and where it would have put them. And to start this important stretch to lose both of these series. Now, again, tomorrow, same thing now. Later today, excuse me. I'll do that. Hate when I do that. Later today, Peterson on the mound against Gomer. This is now another very important win. You cannot lose this series. And Colorado's played fairly well, certainly defensively. They've pitched really well out of the bullpen. I mean, probably better than they have all year. And you've got an important game later today at, 4 o'clock or whenever it is, to secure a series victory against a lousy team and make sure that you don't allow this road trip. And I've been hearing it from everybody. I listened to the Rico Bronya podcast. Evan, I'm a fan. He talked about how he felt like this road trip could be somewhere where they spiral out of control after losing the first two of three. I didn't get to hear the drunk Rico Bronya podcast, but I'm sure he was pissed off after the other night's loss against Colorado. And I've heard a lot, oh, this is where it could spin out of control. I see them falling just short. This is the month. They'll play San Diego and Arizona at the end of the month, and that's those two teams don't lose right now, as Arizona takes two from what was the best record in baseball, the Cleveland Guardians, takes two. They're hot. They can't be stopped, right? I didn't see the entire game, but I know Pittsburgh in the bottom of the ninth had bases loaded, one out. And San Diego still comes to win that game. Like, these two teams are not losing right now. And while the Braves, yes, are struggling to score runs, have come back to down to the pack, and now the third wild card and only a half a game better than your New York Mets, this series, this home road trip, this month, is where you're going to decide who the Mets are. And who they were last night is a team that wouldn't lose. A team that made sure that even though they were being stymied all game long by a lousy bullpen, they figured out a way. They're team leaders in many ways in the young, up-and-coming team leader, second-year guy, face of the franchise over the course of the future, and the guy who absolutely is going to be here facing the team right now. I know we could talk about Pete Alonso. I could do a show on Pete Alonso every night. But Lindor is the guy with the contract. Lindor is the guy who called the meeting. Lindor is the guy who's come through since hitting leadoff. Lindor is the guy who's going to be here for the next couple of years. It's the current face of the franchise and the future of the face of the franchise who have both been imperative in making sure this season has gone the way it's gone since that team meeting, coming through with a big leadoff triple and then the big hit, and then you add in the Winker and the Blackburn and the trade deadline impacts on this game. And you got the faces of the franchise. You got the additions they made for this year, making sure that one of the uglier losses, one of the more disappointing series of the season, didn't happen. At least not yet. And then we get to the Yankees, who split a doubleheader out in the rainy Bronx with the Angels. And now find themselves tied again. Exactly. Identical. Records. With the Baltimore Orioles, I love doing the identical thing for my cousin Vinny. It's one of my favorite things. He has no idea what I'm talking about over there. The 12-year-old behind the scenes has no idea about my cousin Vinny. But anyway, they get a first-game victory. Offense comes through early. Verdugo, who everyone's crying and complaining about, how do you hit Verdugo? You know, I don't understand. His OPS is terrible. Why is Verdugo? Boom, two doubles after he had a miserable series against Toronto. They score some runs, Volpe comes through, and really the story for me in the first game, if we're going to get to it, and really the story in both games is starting pitching for the New York Yankees. Luis Gil. I loved what I saw from Luis Gil in that game yesterday. That opening doubleheader in the rain, lousy day, had no grip, no real feel for his slider, which has been the pitch that has changed his season. After starting dominant with fastballs and change, went into a little bit of a rut, had like three or four miserable starts. Thank you, Soriano, for teaching him the grip on the slider. And since then, it's been fastball slider that has got his season back on track. Didn't have it. Had no feel for it whatsoever. And what I look for in young pitchers, I don't care. Yeah, he throws 98 miles an hour, and we're going to get to the Will Warrens of the world who do not. He throws 98 miles an hour, right? He dominates people. He's having a dominating season. He's been dominating since spring training. He's got the stuff. He's got everything. We know it. On days where he's brilliant and he's got that slider working and the fastball locating and he's striking people out, great. What does he do? I know against the lousy Angels lineup, I understand that they've been able to score some runs and they scored him in the second game and they, you know, have some hitters on this team and they're trying some young kids who've shown some promise. What do you do when you have nothing? What do you do when all you have is your fastball? What do you do when you can't locate anything? What do you do when you have runners on the entire game? What do you do when you have to make a pitch, two outs, full count, bases loaded? What do you do? How do you handle that? And sure, he didn't get them deep into the game, but he came out. And if we have any concerns about his innings, we can have any concerns about fatigue, the New York Yankees pushed him. Aaron Boone pushed him. He finished that fourth inning with 92 pitches or so, and he came back out for the fifth, finished the inning with over 100 pitches, a career high in pitches. The New York Yankees do not seem concerned that he is fatigued. The New York Yankees do not seem concerned about his inning limits. The New York Yankees don't feel like right now they're ready to transition him to the bullpen like so many fans are speculating is going to happen. They pushed him. They went out there and they pushed him knowing a doubleheader was coming, knowing that, you know, they had Will Warren to start the game in the second game. You don't want to go to too much of your bullpen. They needed them to get that fifth. Go out there and get that fifth when you have nothing. Go out there and get through the lineup one more time. Go out there and figure it out. And so he didn't look great. He had runners all over the place. He had 48, 50 pitches through two innings. It wasn't his good stuff. But I love the fact he was able to battle through all that, battle through the weather, battle through not having his breaking stuff, battle through not being dominant, battle through guys on base every inning. That's what you're looking for. Because he might show up a game in October on a rainy night in Cleveland and not have his curveball and not have his slider and be ineffective and not be able to throw his changeup for strikes. How do you get through it? These are the games young pitchers build on. These are the games you expect guys to figure out how to make a pitch, get out of an inning, get a double play. And what we saw, to be able to get through five and give up no runs while the offense was clicking early and added on some late, that's exactly the kind of win and exactly the kind of performance you're looking for moving forward with this team and moving forward with Luis Gil. And then you get to the second game and Will Warren. And let me just say this before everybody gets... Will Warren is a young up-and-coming pitcher. Does he have the stuff of Luis Gil? No, he does not. But we are so quick to call everybody... It gets back to our Cashman hatred. He had two spot starts this year. They have not been good. He looked like he was going to get a chance to get out of that second inning. Couldn't do it. Gave up the grand slam. He was right there. He had bases loaded. Nobody out. Gets two strikeouts. And hopefully it looked like maybe just one run given up. And he gives up a walk and a grand slam. And the game is out of control. Understandable. And it's frustrating. You want to take all these games from the lousy Angels. I'm right there. Now, just like the Mets in their series, the Yankees can't lose a series at home to the Angels. Nestor Cortez better be home Nestor later today if the rain holds up, because they can't afford to lose this game either, tied with the Baltimore Orioles for first place. This now becomes an enormous game for the New York Yankees. But in a doubleheader, when you're going to let the kid pitch as well because you went through your best bullpen and you had four innings in the first game, you're not going to run to your bullpen and blow it up, even though you might have some rainouts and you've had some days off here. You got to let Will Warren pitch. And we're so quick to call guys bums and terrible, and this guy stinks, and he can't pitch. And this is a young kid just getting his feet wet, literally, in Major League Baseball. He's had two spot starts. He hasn't been that good. And it's frustrating to watch when you fall behind 6-0 and the offense has been better. And it's unfortunate when you feel like the game is over in the first two innings, but that's what the doubleheader led them. That's what they're trying to do. They've lost some depth in the rotation with injuries, whether it be Cody Petit or obviously Clark Schmidt, who's hopefully working his way back, says he feels fantastic after throwing batting practice the other day or whatever, going through live pitching. So if he can come back, the rotation can come back, you don't have to see Will Warren hopefully again until next year. But we get hung up on it. I saw the two pitching performances obviously dictated the game. There's a lot to talk about the offense. I'm not going to do it here in the open. We'll do it in a little bit. We got to talk about Wells. We got to talk about Stanton. Got to talk about Jazz Chisholm, who's looked awful here in a Yankee uniform, a home Yankee uniform, after dominating in his first couple games in the road uniform. Maybe the Yankee pinstripes are a little heavy for him. But the Yankees get a split. They have an enormous game later today. The Mets avoid one of the worst losses of the year, in my opinion, not because of heartbreak or anything other than an offense that's been dominating, being shut down by a miserable bullpen, and losing a series to the Colorado Rockies off of losing a series to the Angels. So they avoid that, get a big win, come through with their face of their franchises and the additions at the trade deadline, and the Yankees get a split, still walking Judge. Judge comes through in the first game. Jazz Chisholm doing nothing, and have they found a cleanup hitter in Wells? All to get to over the course of 3 hours. 888-808-1019. Oh, and by the way, did you see Clay Holmes shut down that first game with two strikeouts, by the way, too? Apparently he has swing and miss stuff. I don't know. I don't know what happened. 888-808-1019. Your calls next right here on The Fan.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
It'll be a 1-1 to Judge. The pitch swung on and hit. Deep center field. Trout on the run. Aaron Judge, number 50.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
I can't believe it. The way you look sometimes.
I know.
Like a trampled flag on a city street.
I do look good in this Yankee shirt. 888-808-1019. I feel like I haven't heard this one. Are you playing songs off the back wall or something? Yeah. Look at you. What's this?
21st Digital Boy, Bad Religion. I kind of like it. I listened to it during the break.
The beginning wasn't bad. That's a mouthful, though. 2001, what was it again?
21st Digital Boy.
21st Digital Board?
Yeah. Boy. We got 10 more seconds of it.
Feels like a Guitar Hero song. Which, for by sure. the way, I was listening. I got to talk to Keith. I had no idea. Keith mentioned he worked at Guitar Center. I worked at Guitar Center for years. I had no idea that we both were Guitar Center employees. How about that? I did security at Guitar. I was, whatever you want to. I was the guy up front making sure you didn't run out with guitars. Which, by the way, like, my buddy did the same thing. You know, when we were young, in our early 20s or whatever. He did the same thing at Best Buy, and he would always have these stories about, like, you know, oh, someone tried to grab this, and they ran out, and I tackled them, and then, like, man, you could take the, you know, James Taylor signed acoustic Taylor right off the wall and run out. I'd be like, yo. And then when the police come, I'd be like, yeah, you know, he's wearing a blue hat. I don't know. Hey, I'm not, you think I'm tackling someone? I'm not tackling anybody. Bye. Where you want to go? I'm here to make sure receipts match up, buddy. You got a serial number on your receipt. You got a serial number on your guitar. I got to make sure they're the same. Other than that, you want to grab some string? You want to grab some guitar strings off the rack and make a run for it? God bless you.
You ever seen Mall Cop?
You think I'm stopping you? Yeah, of course. Yeah. But he would always be like, oh, man. And you see all these scenes of security guards and everything stopping. I'm like, are you crazy? I'm not fighting you. I'm there to, like, look imposing and make sure, you know, give you the feel that I will tackle you. Did I don't actually tackle you. I mean, nobody ever ran out with a guitar. But, you know, I guess you want to make a run for it right there. Maybe I'll put a foot out. I'll put the old foot out and see if I can trip you. That's it. You jump over that bad boy, you are gone, home free. I'll run outside and see if I can get your license plate. Like, that's it.
They didn't have anything that would, like, set an alarm off. Like, now you can't buy an undershirt without, like, having a little.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm sure. Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of the guitars were, but, like, if you were attached to something, but, like, if you went to the associate, the guitar salesman, whatever, was like, oh, I want to try this one out, and he, you know, gave it to you, whatever. No, you could probably just all of a sudden just, like, do Stairway to Heaven, which wasn't allowed, but you know, whatever, and then just all of a sudden. Just take it and run. I mean, you could. You're on camera everywhere. Like, you know, but I suppose you could. But I worked at Guitar Center. I heard Keith say he was working at Guitar Center. I said, what are the odds? What are the odds that half of the day is taken up on WFN by former Guitar Center employees? Who knew? What are we talking about? Oh, yeah, the Yankees and Mets, right. We do have to talk about a little bit of the Giants as they start their year. The football season begins tonight. I'm sure I'll do a lot more of that with Loogie today. I'll be filling in for Tiki and, I guess, and Evan and Marash. Filling in with Loogie today. I'm sure he'll talk about Giants. I heard Keith, you know, talk about what he's been saying about Malik Nabers already. Very excited about Malik Nabers. We're going to get into what I'm excited to see in the first 4 minutes of the game that I'll watch and then forget about it and tune into something else. But we'll talk about it. But I obviously we started with the Mets and Yankees. Huge win for the Mets. I'm not downplaying the win. I'm just there are games where you can't lose. And so it's a good solid win, but it avoided a disastrous loss. Because if they lost today and they didn't score anything in the ninth and then, you know, Diaz gives up that triple to lead off the bottom of the ninth, we're having a different conversation right now. We're having a different conversation about a disappointing Mets team that's floundering while other teams in the wild card race are surging, and it's just it would have been a bad look. It would have been a bad feel. That's a good win. And Alvarez, especially, to get that ball off the wall and hit that triple, that's a big hit. That's a big hit. As we're still waiting for guys to come through with big hits, let's be honest. Alonso's still struggling. You have Vientos 0-for-4 in this game. Iglesias with two hits in this game and played some good third base guarding the line in this game, but his OPS is down to 880, which is amazing, but it was over 1,000 like a week and a half ago. He's cooled off a little bit, playing a little bit less. But Taylor, who is all over the lineup, hit ninth in this game, hit second in other games. I mean, it's all over the place. But they've been so good offensively, top to bottom, that, you know, you're starting to get worried about this. And we talked about it yesterday. The two real fears of the Mets right now is the offense not being what it was and the starting pitching with Severino. And speaking of, Keith is texting me right now. See if he worked the Guitar Center. Oh, he's just laughing. I thought he was going to give me some. Yeah, I worked the Guitar Center. Severino. I lost my train of thought for a second. Thanks a lot, Keith. Doing a show, pal. No, I'm just kidding. Thank you, buddy. Severino, and I heard Loogie say this, too, and I guess there's been some sort. I know we've been talking about innings, right? So when we talk about innings and inning limits and the amount of innings they've pitched prior to this year, and yeah, no doubt, he's already pitched more than anything he's done since 2018. It's been a long, arduous last few years for Luis Severino. And so now to be about at 130 innings, whenever you start to talk about that and you see struggles, typically with younger players like Luis Gil, you hear the bullpen. Because it's not often that the innings are so low for veteran pitchers like this, but he's been injured so much over the last 5 years that here's where we are. But I still don't, I don't see it. I don't see a transition to the bullpen for Luis Severino. I mean, you can mess with him a little bit. You can skip a start here or there. You could figure things out with him. You can pull him early. I don't know, but I'm not. Severino's a starter. He's done this before. He's had multiple years of like around 200 innings. I'm not going to transition to the bullpen. One, I don't know if he could do it. And two, like the other aspect of it was to move Buto back. I didn't mention Buto in the open. I must have forgot somehow. But how about his two innings? This guy has been unbelievable for the Mets since transitioning to the bullpen. I mean, he has been a absolute godsend. And we talked about the ability. I want to see the stats. I saw a tweet with what he's done. Buto with, this was from John Harper. Buto with two more scoreless innings while game was tied, continues to be savior, absolutely, would get votes for most indispensable Met. We actually talked about that a lot with Pete Alonso. Who in the lineup is most indispensable? And you'd have five or six guys at least before you got to Pete Alonso. But he has a .87 ERA since going to the bullpen. Two runs in 20 and two-third innings. I mean, Buto has been unbelievable. I'm not moving him out of the pen. When it works, it works. It reminds me of like Jobber Chamberlain a little bit. Like, it works right now. Next year, who knows? If he pitches well the entire rest of the year in the bullpen, I'm not saying he has to be a reliever forever. Maybe next year, especially considering the Mets really don't have a rotation for next year. Could you see Buto back into the rotation next year? Absolutely. Absolutely. If you feel like he's done really well and you've got confidence in him, sure. But right now, he's too. I know they're getting relievers back, right? Reed Garrett just pitched. Reed Foley. Enough where Ottavino thinks he might be cut, which would make no sense according to him, which I get. Would be foolish. So I know they're getting some relievers back, and even Nunez. They're hoping will come back. I don't care. He's been their most effective reliever this entire season. Nobody has put together, at least that I can remember, maybe Reed Garrett at the beginning of the season. Maybe Reed Garrett to start the year when he was one of the talking points of baseball, not only just with the Mets, when he was off to this incredible start in the bullpen. Other than that, which now seems fluky, nobody has given you 20 innings with this kind of performance. Nobody has been has been secure in the bullpen. And plus, he's able to give you multiple innings at a time, get out of jams, and give you multiple innings. This guy is too important. I'm not messing with him. He's staying in the bullpen. Absolutely. I'm not switching him and Severino. Why? Why would I hinder two? I don't know if his stuff plays better in the bullpen. He's been better in the bullpen. His changeups played better. His location's better. Everything's better. And yeah, you could say, well, he's found it. Let's put him back in the rotation. I disagree. I need him in this bullpen. Again, last night, two innings. Keeps that, you know, Rockies lineup at bay while the Mets are struggling to score runs. But I understand the temptation with Severino. And I know right now Blackburn's giving you two good starts. Minaya, over his last two starts, has been dominant to the point where he's the only first guy since Doc Gooden. Doc Gooden and Tom Seaver, the only two Mets to have back-to-back starts, seven innings or more, with 10 or 11 strikeouts. Like, I would have never have guessed that from Sean Manaea, but I can't count on that. And really, what Peterson is pitching so well, I can remove Severino. I understand the innings limits. It's something to be mindful of. It's something to be mindful of. It's something the Mets should probably watch, where if they get out to, like, you know, if the Mets jump out on someone and have one of their feast or famine type games and they score 10 runs and they're up, you know, 9-1 in the third inning, maybe those are the kind of games you pull Severino. Maybe you skip him a start. You know, you do things like that to monitor the innings, give him as much time as possible, push him back a start, like the Yankees are doing with Marcus Stroman, and they pushed him back to Sunday and moved Nestor Cortez up. You know, you do things like that. You monitor it. You pay attention to him. You focus on it. You know, maybe you don't let him face the third time through the lineup as much as you have been over the first, you know, 3-4 months of the season. But you don't take him out of the rotation. You don't put him in the bullpen. For what? You got guys coming back who've been effective, and I don't know if Severino could do it. He had one stretch of it in 2021 for the New York Yankees. Other than that, I'm not, you know, it's been unfamiliar territory to him, and right now he probably feels like he's having one of the better years of his career. I know, or at least in a while, innings wise, he's 7-5 with a 4.06. It's nothing to write home about, but it's more consistent than he's been since 2018. I think he's looking forward to trying figuring this thing out and getting the rest of the way and pitching in postseason games, which is why last night's win was so important. And then you get to the Yankees in a talking point I wanted to get to, because yes, the second game is disappointing. Yes, the game was over in the second inning. Yes, Will Warren is one of these prospects who comes up. And, you know, I know when guys come up throughout the league, and the only reason why you know them is because there's note of it, right? Like Paul Skeens and these guys, they come up and they throw 100 miles an hour and these flame-throwing prospects. And how come the Yankees don't have one? Well, you know, there are a few of them, and the reason you know them is because you really don't pay that much attention to around the league, except when they force-feed you these guys who are throwing 100 miles an hour for the Reds or the Pirates or whomever. You don't see all the other prospects that come up and throw the 94-mile-an-hour sinker, because they're not on the tips and tongues of media outlets and highlights on social media. But, I mean, it's a disappointing loss, and we'll see what Will Warren can be. He's not an important part of this piece. He's a spot starter. They had a spot starter in Cody Petit. He did a great job. He got hurt. So they're waiting for guys to come back. But what I saw, I know that's a talking point. Everybody's upset. Everyone's mad at the second loss. Sure, I get it. Frustrating loss. And everyone wants to talk about Judge in the lineup. We'll get to it. The cleanup hitter right now isn't a problem. And here's the thing. They're going to walk Judge no matter what. I'm telling you, like, Soto's great. Soto's great. Are you telling me that, you know, in a big spot where the Yankees are maybe down a run or two, they're going to pitch the Judge because Juan Soto's on deck? It guarantees it. It helps it more than other players, no doubt. But right now, their cleanup hitter, Austin Wells, has a 900 OPS as the cleanup hitter. And if you watched him yesterday, I mean, this guy, you know, the conversation I just made about him and Soto is going to continue into next year, because what Wells is doing right now and solidifying himself as the starting catcher, I don't care about Trevino coming back. Let's be honest. He's the backup catcher. If they go anywhere near a platoon, I will scream every single day. Austin Wells is the starting catcher of the New York Yankees. And watching him hit like this, and not only just the good swings where he pulls an inside fastball for a home run, or his last out of the game where he hits in the first game of the doubleheader where he hits a bullet to the second baseman, the base hit with runners in scoring position, where he just reaches out and flicks it over the shortstop head. Those are the kind of at-bats that make me really feel good about Austin Wells. And since all those numbers and J.D. Davis hitting cleanup for the Mets, and we talked about how bad the cleanup spot has been for the New York Yankees, as a cleanup hitter, Austin Wells has a 900 OPS. And it's good at-bat after good at-bat. And what's great about it, clearly it stabilized the lineup. It's able to move guys like Jazz Chisholm or Verdugo and Torres when they're not hitting leadoff, depending right-handed, left-handed, push him back, push Volpe back, push Ben Rice back, and elongate this lineup. And even in the loss, this Yankee team feels different. The lineup feels different. The energy feels different. The length of the lineup feels different. The amount of good hitters you feel and the amount of good at-bats you're having throughout the game feel different. Everything feels different, and nothing is more important to that, because Judge and Soto have been there when they felt terrible. So yeah, Judge and Soto are the most two important players, sure, but they were still playing great when the Yankees were floundering and the lineup felt awful and disgusting, and like it did last year or 2021 or the second half of 2022. They've been there throughout all of it. The difference has been Volpe getting hot, Verdugo getting a little bit hot, and Austin Wells transforming himself into one of, if not the best offensive catchers in the sport. And it's not only right now, it's stabilized the lineup, but if you want to have a legit conversation, which I've tried to have a bunch, about how the Yankees keep Juan Soto. Because initially, there are so many people who are just convinced they're not going to do it because of Hal's comments about the payroll and the threshold and the taxes and all that stuff. Oh, he wants to keep it under $300 million. How are you going to do that with Stanton? How are you going to do that with this? How are you going to do that? How are you going to do it? By your cleanup hitter being the best young catcher in the sport. Like, that's how you do it. How you do it is to have Volpe, who's been killing it as of late, and another RBI double in this game, cheap at second at shortstop. How do you do it? Jazz Chisholm, who hopefully is going to turn around. He's had some terrible at-bats here in Yankee Stadium and a bunch of strikeouts yesterday. How do you do it? A young, inexpensive Jazz Chisholm for a couple years in your infield. That's how you do it. How do you do it? Ben Rice at first base. And a lot of those things felt like, well, where the hell are the Yankees going to be with that plan, McMonagall, just a few weeks ago. Now, it's starting to feel a lot better. I mean, it's starting to feel a hell of a lot better, and no more. Even Volpe. Like, let's be honest, what we've seen from Volpe now is impressive. You know how good he is defensively? He always has been that good. He won the Gold Glove last year. Was he a Gold Glove caliber shortstop last year? I don't know. Maybe not. But he won it, and he's been that this year, other than the most brutal era of his, and I hope of his entire career, in that game against Baltimore. But other than that play, he's been pretty damn good at shortstop for every day. And the offense has come and gone, no doubt. When he's playing the way he's played at the beginning of the year and the way he's playing now, and you look at his WAR and comparative to other, like, he's got a top, I think it was a top 25 WAR in baseball this year. Like, he's become a nice young player, and you're hoping it continues to develop. And yeah, he was the big name. But let me tell you something, the same thing I've said about Gary Sanchez. We look back at the Yankees and Jorge Posada, and that was a different generation. There were a lot of good offensive catchers back then. Piazza, Javi Baez. Not Javi Baez. I'm losing my mind. The catcher for the Braves. I'm losing my mind. I'll figure it out. Obviously, there was a lot more good hitting catchers back in the day. But you look at it now throughout baseball, if you have the advantage of having an excellent offensive catcher, and he's been far better defensively than everybody told us as well. I mean, if Austin Wells is going to transform himself into one of the better offensive players at that position, it's an enormous advantage. Look up and down the league. Every time the catcher comes up, he's hitting 7th, 8th, 9th. He's got a .220 batting average. He's got 10 home runs. Like, there's not a lot. There's a handful of offensive catchers. That's why Gary Sanchez was referred to as the unicorn. I know, you know, there's been a bunch of unicorns over the last handful of years. Porzingis really started the unicorn trend. But he was the unicorn called by Brian Cashman because there weren't offensive there weren't catcher power hitters. He was it. He was the one catcher. He was the one offensive catcher in the sport, it felt like. The one guy who consistently hit 30 home runs for a 2 or 3 year span. That's a huge advantage. Jorge Posada wasn't the greatest of defensive catchers. We know that. Javi Lopez, thank you. This the catcher for the Braves. Jorge Posada wasn't good behind the plate. We know this. He was particularly terrible at plays at the plate. My God. But he hit 290, and he hit 25 home runs. And he was an offensive switch-hitting force in the middle of the Yankee lineup. That's the value of Jorge Posada. That could be the value of Austin Wells. And the added value is, I don't have to go out and get more offense. I don't have to add. I have guys throughout the lineup here I feel good about. And next year in the offseason, it helps this year. And next year when I'm trying to sign Juan Soto, and I can say to myself, well, where do I get offense from? I know Juan Soto's great, but this lineup, we're going to probably lose Gleyber Torres. DJ LeMahieu is getting another year older. Stanton's getting another year older. Where's our offense coming from? And you can look back at this year and go, well, Volpe, Jazz Chisholm, and Austin Wells. And that's how you figure out how to keep the payroll somewhere around where Hal Steinbrenner would like it. Not where Hal Steinbrenner needs it. He can keep it right where it is, but where he likes it. How do you manage all that and pay Juan Soto more than Aaron Judge? Which he will get more than Aaron Judge, you dopes. How do you do all that? You have Austin Wells come through and become one of the better hitting catchers in baseball. And this is not a weak This is not me reacting to a couple of games. This has now been a trend since Trevino went down, and he's got legitimate everyday playing time. The guy's been killing it. And his at-bats look terrific. They look really good. And that hit in this game yesterday, the first game of doubleheader, where it looked like they might strand a runner at third to just flick one over the shortstop's head. That's not just a power-hitting catcher. That's not just a guy with a plan looking for an inside fastball. That's a guy who can react. That's a guy who can figure it out. That's a good hitter. And the Yankees are desperate for good hitters. And it looks like they found one. 888-808-1019. So let's get into it. Let's get into the big win for the Mets. Let's get into some of the different stuff in the lineup. We can get into Judge and Soto and flip-flopping them. I know everybody wants to talk about that. Let's talk about Luis Gil and his ability to get through. Let's talk about Warren and how terrible he was and whether or not he can make another start. Are there other options for the New York Yankees if they need another spot start in the next 2 months? How big is this game now later today with Nestor Cortez? How big is it with Peterson? We still got baseball. Football does start tonight, but we still have baseball. Big games against bad teams for both New York teams right here on The Fan. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you till 5 a.m. We'll be right back.
Not talk to an attorney. And I guarantee if we take you as a client, we'll get you out of your timeshare or you'll pay nothing.
Call now for your free timeshare exit info kit. 800-858-1199. That's 800-858-1199. 800-858-1199.
Start some trouble and call The Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
Summer feel to me. Tom Petty's music, I don't know, reminds me of summer. Music is so much like that. I'm very much like that with music. It gives me feels of time of year, time of my life. Like, it immediately brings you back. And Tom Petty has a summer feel to me for whatever reason.
Little more life somewhere else. After all, it was a great big world.
And Beatle albums are like that for me. I've talked about this. For whatever reason, I don't know what it was like when I was listening to them, when I was into them, but like everyone, the White Album reminds me of Thanksgiving. Don't know why. Feels like that. The Revolver is very much a spring, Easter kind of feel for me. I don't know why. Sgt. Pepper is summer. Abbey Road is around my birthday in December. Trying to think. And then there's like the McCartney solo albums. For whatever reason, Wildlife, which is not a very good album. It's okay. It's his first, the first Wings album, Wildlife. It has a couple of moments in it, but it reminds very much a summer album. So is Venus and Mars is also a summer album. Rock show. All right, we're getting weird now. You know, I thought I was all kind of hard knocked out. It was hard to get back. Like, I watch Hard Knocks every year. When it first started, I loved it. My enthusiasm for it has waned throughout the years. Last year, obviously, big because of the Jets. And obviously this year with the off-season edition with the New York Giants, which I loved other than the final episode. The final episode was an absolute snooze fest. But I got into it. I always watch Hard Knocks. I already had a Hard Knocks. I've never watched the mid-season one. I've never watched it. Never bothered. Didn't care. I have enough football. This is about a football fix. Like, that's what it is. It's a football fix. It gives you that, it scratches that itch. In the middle of the year, I don't have that itch to watch the Indianapolis Colts. Like, I don't. So, I haven't bothered to even pay attention or think about Hard Knocks with the Bears. I guess the first episode was last night or the night before. I don't know. But I did see the opening. I think it was one of the opening things. And I have to admit, it was pretty freaking awesome. They did a thing on, obviously, Caleb Williams, the number one pick, hopefully future of the franchise for them. And they took a sports radio host, I guess in Chicago, I'm assuming, or something, you know, someone. It could have been a national guy on TV, but it's a sports commentator voice, you could tell. And he says, Caleb Williams has a chance to be the biggest athlete in Chicago sports since Michael Jordan. And immediately, they go right into the Chicago Bulls music, and they show him walking through, getting dressed, they're playing the music, and then they brought back the actual announcer who did it. And he goes, and now, starting for your Chicago Bears! Like, it was awesome. Because, much like music, even though I hated the Bulls, it took me back to my youth. It took me back, and I guess we're going to get NBA on NBC as well. It took me right back to my youth watching the Bulls beat the Knicks all the time. But if you find that, I saw it on Barstool. There's a couple places. I don't know if you want to, I'm sure we could play it. I don't see why not. It was on Barstool. But to just have it, like, I thought two things. I actually saw I talked about this yesterday, the Pete Rose, two things back to back now on HBO that I thought transitioned into the open of the show perfectly. And I talked about it yesterday. I thought they did a great job with Pete Rose. Like, they opened the thing without credits, without a music intro or whatever to this docu-series or whatever. It just opens up in whatever town in, you know, the Cincinnati, obviously Cincinnati, but it was like a small part of Cincinnati, blah, blah, blah. Then it's Pete doing an interview, and he's talking about Joe Burrow and the Super Bowl. Like, it must have been filmed during the time of the Cincinnati Rams Super Bowl. And he's talking about how Joe Burrow has lifted the city, much like the Reds did back in the 70s, and it's awesome to see, and he loves Joe Burrow, and Joe Burrow's great, and the team has a chance, and blah, 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 and then he just looks at the camera, and he goes, but I bet on the Rams, and then they cut to, like, the opening of the documentary. I thought that was awesome. Like, it was just really well done to hear Pete Rose just go, but I bet on the Rams. Like, it was just so well done, and now this, to see this, you can't get it?
I'm looking.
Yeah, it's on Barstool. I mean, you can find it. It's on one of the things with Barstool. I got to find it. But it might be a day old because I was scrolling down for a while. But it's on there. It's on their site. Or I think what's his name? Big Cat might have tweeted it, so you could look at Big Cat's Twitter. But we'll get it for you at some point. But it was awesome. It was just a really good intro to immediately get, like, that transition of he's got a chance to be the biggest athlete in Chicago since Michael Jordan, then go right into the Bulls music. It was actually pretty cool. And I guess there's another thing. He's got, like, a lot of people getting on. I saw he's got, like, a bag that looks like a purse, and everybody's getting on him. Like, people are nuts. You know, he can't get emotional with his mother. He can't paint his fingernails. He's got a bag we're all uncomfortable with. Like, just let him be him, man. He's been one of the best college prospects. We've been hearing about this kid for forever. He had an incredible junior year followed by a disappointing senior year. Hey, so did Dan Marino. I wasn't around for it, but I've heard about it. Like, let him just play. Much like Malik Nabers, who we're going to get into right now. And we're all waiting to see our first glimpse of Malik Nabers. We'll get into the Giants in a little bit. Should Daniel Jones play in the preseason? Are we looking forward to Malik Nabers? I've already given you, I talked about it yesterday, I'll talk about it again, who I'm really looking to see in this offense. And yes, we all know how good Nabers is, and sure, I'd like to see it, but I think there's another player who changes the dynamic of this offense if he can be what we all hope he could be. So we'll get into that a little bit. We can get to the Jets and Hassan Reddick as the lockout continues. And, oh, you have it now? All right, let's go to it real quick. So this is, we'll get to the Jets and the Hassan Reddick lockout where the money's getting to the point where he's even doing himself any favors. I'm surprised it's gone this far. Speaking about money, the Giants were fined for all the fights with the Lions leading up to tonight's game. So we'll get into that as well. It's a little bit of football on the schedule here in the next hour or so, but I want to just play this for you because I thought it was awesome. And if you're a 90s kid like me or just remember, or a Knick fan who, even though it means disaster, hearing this music, especially like as a kid, I don't know, we played it a lot as a kid. Like, I played for St. Catharines CYO basketball in Franklin Square, and this was like the song they played in the pregame warmups. Like, there's just something about this song that instantly takes me back to childhood. So I just thought the whole thing was well done, but this was, I guess, the intro into Hard Knocks, the first episode of the Chicago Bears.
Going to be the best Bears quarterback ever.
Caleb Williams
has the opportunity to be the biggest thing in Chicago since Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan. Michael
Jordan. That song just makes me smile, even though I hate them. I don't know why.
It's very well done.
Go.
All right, that's enough. Then they go into showing and playing a camp and everything. But I don't. There's something about that song, man. It brings a smile to my face, even though I despise the Bulls in the moment. Like you hate. I mean, you. It wasn't the same. I hated the Pacers more because I viewed them on par with the Knicks, and I hated losing to the Pacers. You knew you were going to lose to the Bulls. Like you just knew Michael Jordan was going to beat you. It didn't feel as bad as watching Reggie Miller beat you. It didn't feel as bad as watching Rick Smits beat you. Like it didn't feel as bad as Dale and Antonio Davis beating you. Mark Jackson beating you. Like that, they seemed like average, you know, even though they were great, you know, they seemed like normal humans who the Knicks had normal humans. And why the hell are we losing to them? And when you played the Bulls, you expected to lose. They were the Bulls. He was Michael Jordan. He wasn't going to lose. So even though I hated that song as a kid, or at least hated the Bulls, that song, it reminds me of so much more than just the Bulls, too. It's just something about the era. It reminds me of basketball, of my youth. It's just something about that song. To hear that voice again, I thought it was just well done with the Bears. They're leaning into, obviously, the greatest, other than the 85 Bears, and that was just 1 year. What's been better in Chicago than the Bulls of that era? I mean, that's one of the great teams of all time. So to lean into that in the opening of Hard Knocks, try and connect him to Michael Jordan, why not? 888-808-1019. Mick Monagle here with you. 1 hour down, 2 more to go. We got you till 5 o'clock in the warm-up show right here on The Fan. We'll be right back after the update.